welcome to our Straight to the Comments mini episode.
So in our mini episodes, we follow a bit of a different format from our usual deep dive episodes.
Yes, and in this mini, we'll be playing our usual comment guessing game, where Lisa's going to be trying to guess the topic from the out of context comments that I'll be reading to her.
I am, and we're going to be discussing one of your topics that you wanted us to answer, which this week is Lizzo's recent announcement and Rebel Wilson's revelations.
And of course, we're going to round it out by giving you our crazy celeb predictions. So Lisa, are you ready to guess?
Absolutely. Let's do it.
Okay, so today I'm going to start you off with the first comment. The apocalypse is nigh.
Not again. Every episode no. starts with this foreboding, awful end of the world statement. Sarah, okay, I need another clue.
Bunny, treble clef and Mother Nature think I'm good.
Bunny, treble clef and what?
Mother Nature think I'm good.
Ooh, this is hard.
Yeah.
Another clue, please.
I chose a really hard one for you. It'll all make sense in a minute. I'm picturing myself hurling Bob Marley lyrics at my adversaries. It's not looking good for me. Save yourselves.
Oh my gosh. I'm really, really lost.
And the final one, my scars and pain I carry with me are my tattoos, and I'd repay my enemies with them tenfold. Any closer?
It's not Brooklyn Beckham, is it? Because I know he's got a lot of tattoos.
So this is based on a tweet that I saw that said, if you had to go into battle with only the items tattooed on you, would you survive? I've got a sword, a crossbow and a needle. And these are some of the comments on that. And I just thought it was like really hilarious. Because it's like, just from the comments, what could the question be?
This is insane. So do you have any tattoos?
I do. I have a squiggle on my wrist. It's literally a squiggle. I can't describe it. People keep asking me, oh, is that a hieroglyph? And I'm like, no, I just drew it on me when I was 19. It
you
means
drew it
absolutely
on.
Nothing. Well, I drew it on and then had it tattooed. I used to doodle on myself.
I was
going to
say, like, is that some serious biro work there?
I've got a Maya Angelou quote, a poem on the poem title on my other arm, and it says, still I rise. So I would be absolutely useless using those as any kind of weapon. And there are actually some really interesting comments on this. So someone said, can invisible tattoos make me invisible? Because not only would I survive, I'd make things inconvenient for the opposing side. Lots of tied shoelaces, for example.
Ooh.
You could do that because I don't think you have tattoos, do you?
I don't have tattoos. And it's funny, isn't it? Because I remember from quite a young age, people saying, oh, you know, when you're about 16 and first it was the ear piercing.
When I was younger,
13, I want my ears pierced. And then you had some girls that were allowed to have their ears pierced and some not. And then it moved up to nose rings, which were really cool in 1993 when we were at sixth form.
Like real ones or the fake ones?
Yeah, like a real nose ring. Like it was a big deal. Like, especially for me and doing drama and, artsy stuff. The only thing I had was my sort of red hair, which was like not Rihanna red, but like really auburn. I dyed it, but not a tattoo. That felt like the final milestone in sort of pissing your parents off or finding your identity, you know?
Well, my mum always said to us, when you're 18, you can do whatever you want. I mean, except take drugs was her little caveat.
Okay.
She'd been quite an overbearing parent, so I didn't think that... I thought that was something she said when we were, 14. But when I got my first tattoo at, I think, 19, she was genuinely, she does not like tattoos, but she was like, that's your body, it's your choice.
Mm-hmm.
And my sister has a tiny star, and my mum once said to me, both my kids have tattoos. Where did I go so wrong? Which just shows you that sort of mindset of having grown up in the 40s, you know?
Yeah, and very Puritan almost, because I remember my parents being a bit funny about wearing makeup and even nail polish. Just keep yourself as natural as possible, as long as possible, which we know it's a different generation now. And actually, you know what I was thinking about? You know that real sailor tattoos?
Yes.
I find them really sexy on men, real arms with sailor tattoos. I don't know why I'm whispering when I'm on a podcast, but I find them really sexy.
You're like, just in case my tattoo-less boyfriend hears.
Yeah, just get a full sleeve. But the thing is, there was always this thing like for women, and I remember learning about it young, tramp stamp.
Yes, on the lower back. You know, interestingly, I did a little bit of research and people are probably aware of this, but tattoos actually were introduced to the West by Captain Kirk after he returned from the South Seas in 1769 and he'd seen them on Polynesian women.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was that whole period where it was mainly sailors who were associated with them or prostitutes, and it was considered like quite low rent. I'm talking 100 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, do you think there's still a stigma associated with tattoos?
Well, actually, when you think of the celebrity world, I really remember this sort of watershed moment when, I mean, gosh, when Angelina Jolie came out, and we both admitted we had these girl crushes on her in the late 90s, and she started having these beautiful tattoos, like more calligraphy and artsy, and like you said, a quote, more than like, oh, I'm going to tattoo on, I don't know, like, I don't know what, I love pool, my hometown. Something really tatty, literally. It sort of became classy and almost like, really, I don't know, sort of sexy again. Do you know what I mean?
I do, but do you think it's like if you're in the arts, it's like really cool. It like adds something. But is there, I mean, I haven't worked in the corporate world like you. Do you think, you know, if someone came in for a job interview in a really conservative corporate industry, do you think if they had a face tat, they would get hired?
Oh, well, yeah, that's a bit extreme. I think I don't think I've ever come across that before. But I tell you what, I do remember having a conversation with someone many years ago where someone wore T-shirts and had sleeves, like proper tattoo sleeves. And there was this sort of unwritten thing. We were quite a conservative company, you know, and it was Dress Down Friday. I think people were really like, you need to cover that up. Like it was seen as like off-putting if clients came in. There was that kind of thing, like still associated. I don't know what it is. It's, you know, I'm thinking that there's near me in Norway, there's a big Harley Davidson convention that comes here once a year. And I go down and look at the bikes. I know it's Sons of Anarchy down there. You know, it's like the bikes, the tattoos. I mean, it's just it feels like its own culture. And I feel like it's so opposite to going to a prim and proper conservative job every day.
Yeah. But it's so on the, it seems much more mainstream now. So according to a 2015 Harris poll, nearly one in three Americans, that's 29%, have a tattoo. And most people with a tattoo have more than one. But I will say that when I chose my tattoos, I very much considered location. So the first one I got was on my wrist. But I remember thinking it could be covered up with a watch or a bracelet. Mm-hmm. And the other consideration I had, maybe this is very specific to me, was because I've always gained and lost weight, I was like, which areas are not going to stretch? Like, I wouldn't get one on my stomach because I remember reading some quote about a woman, she started off with like a kitten on her butt, but she ended up with a tiger as she got older. And I'm like, that would so be me. And no shame in it. Do what you want. But for me, it was very much wrist or ankle. They're not going to be affected by that. It's interesting. A lot of people started looking into whether you can actually predict people's personality based on their tattoos, which I feel like, I'm not sure. I think it's individual.
Sorry, I have to say something because I think some of the funniest things I've seen online was when people said that they've got tattoos and then they found out it says, you know, they think it's in sort of Thai or Chinese and it says, I love cheese sandwiches.
Yeah, and they thought it was something really deep and it's actually like chicken chow mein or something. Yeah, I think mine's a squiggle, but it's a squiggle. I haven't found it anywhere. But also some people are purely aesthetic and other people it has a lot of meaning. So Jen Eisenhower, who's a tattoo artist, she said, you don't judge a book by its cover, but you can tell a lot about if someone has a specific tattoo. You can see their story if they have a semicolon or a cancer ribbon or a Medusa.
Mm.
And the semicolon, do you know about that? Because that was one I was considering. It's very much, it's this idea of people who've had depression or suicidal depression, and a semicolon is where they could have ended their life, but they kept going. So it was a pause instead of a full stop. And it's to do with surviving depression, I think, like things like that. Or, you know, if your mum died and you have something about her that honours her, I think there's something really meaningful, you know?
Yeah, actually, you might have just heard my dog barking. I might get Zena's face tattooed on my arm. I honestly see the reason people do it when they want to collect memories and almost like keep it on the very body. But the thing is, right, I think humans, we love to decorate ourselves, don't we? I was thinking that we are a bit boring. And do you remember when we did go through that phase in the 2000s where people were having the nose rings? And I suppose you call it a cultural appropriation now. And I used to love it when Madonna, she did the Frozen video. She had all her hands done in that kind of Indian tattoos on her hands. Do you know what they're called?
Mehndi. It's often particularly, I think for Hindus, it's often, it's a cultural thing they also do prior to a wedding. So specific patterns are associated with being a woman who's about to get married. So it can have all these, you know, it has real significance for them.
And for me, I can really feel, okay, that's really beautiful because it feels very artful. But I did know, and I many years ago, someone who did tattoos of like video game characters on young men. And I'm wondering, how did that age out?
I think because my uncle asked me this as well. He said, you're going to regret that when you're older. And, you know, I don't want to go too heavy, but like my first tattoo actually had quite a lot of meaning in its placement. And I feel like it, this is going to sound weird, but I feel like it in some ways saved my life. So even if it's not relevant now, I can always appreciate it. Whereas if they had that strong a relationship at that time, then maybe. But you also see a lot of people do things impulsively and then later they're like, so those people who get their boyfriend's name tattooed on them and, you know, they're in a great place and then later they break up and it ends really badly, you know?
Yeah. Like Johnny Depp, when he had to change the tattoo Winona Forever to Wine Forever.
Yeah, Wino Forever.
You could argue there was Wino Forever for him. Yes, I think that's the thing, isn't it? I have that impulsive thing where I really want a hair colour, especially when I was younger. And then I'd go back a week later and change it back. Like I just couldn't sit with it. So that's the thing with tattoos, isn't it? It's like you can't. I always had that fear like you then have to kind of have it removed, which sounds very painful.
You do have that option. You have it removed. Or I know people who've had another one done over it. Because maybe the first one was quite poor quality and then they do it better. So there are options. And, you know, I personally will never regret mine. I still don't know if I'd get another one. I don't know where I'd put it, what I'd get. But like, you know, I ponder it. So for me, I think everyone has to do what suits them. And you know what? I would love any of you listeners, if you've got tattoos, to send us pictures on Instagram because we'd love to see them.
Yeah, as long as they're in fairly decent places and we can look. I'm wondering now, because in Norway, tattoos are a big thing, big business. In fact, Johnny Depp, they did a big news story when he came here after the Amber Heard case. He went to these famous tattoo artists and they kind of made a whole documentary about it. Like he was in this holed up in this hotel just getting new tattoos. And I was like, there's literally no place left on him, but he's so cool. And it's really interesting what you said, because obviously he's got that huge pirate association. And I feel like it is so rock and roll having a tattoo and pirate and rebel.
Like Lenny Kravitz. I'm like, you're just sexy.
Yeah, and I'm like the most boring person with no tattoos. Except maybe my future Labrador tattoo on my heart.
Who knows? Who knows?
So quite a few people reached out to us, Sarah, asking us about the whole Lizzo story that happened this week about her going on into Instagram and saying that she's quitting the music industry.
If anyone hasn't heard about it, she made a post on Friday where she said, I'm getting tired of putting up with being dragged by everyone in my life and on the internet. All I want is to make music and make people happy and help the world be a little better than how I found it. She then went on to complain, saying, I'm constantly up against lies being told about me for clout and views and being the butt of the joke every single time because of how I look. Then she finally said, I didn't sign up for this shit. I quit. Mm. Yeah, I mean, that was made all the headlines.
Yeah, and it's interesting, isn't it? Because a year ago, we did the fat shaming episode with Adele, Rebel Wilson and Lizzo. And we particularly focused on how Lizzo gets a lot of hate online because she wears very sexy or scanty clothes, which I remember a comment someone saying like, well, she doesn't do anything different to what Beyonce is doing, but just in a bigger body.
Yeah, exactly. But it was actually after that episode, there were then a whole series of scandals and allegations that came out against her. She is currently still involved in a sexual harassment lawsuit, which was filed by three of her former dancers. And in it, they alleged that she created a hostile work environment and even sexually harassed employees. However, she has completely denied this.
Mm-hmm.
She's also facing a second lawsuit from another former employee who alleges that she allowed bullying, harassment, and racial discrimination on her team. And I have to be honest, I was really shocked when it came out. I mean, I know you were as well.
Yeah.
It seemed so off-brand.
I know, and it's just the last person you thought would be going around fat-shaming and bullying. But the thing is, when she made this announcement this week on Instagram, I went and looked at some of the comments underneath her post, and this is what people were saying. I think a big group of people think that this is just a PR stunt.
Yeah.
One person said, when does I Quit come out on Spotify? And then someone else said, you know that April Fool's is tomorrow, right?
I'd forgotten about that.
I know.
Yeah.
But there's also, I mean, I saw a lot of support for her, you know, including, you mean so much to people like me who have trouble loving themselves. I put on your music and I instantly feel better. Please don't quit. And then this comment, get yourself a Beyonce shut off switch, sis. Find tools and practices to shut out the noise. It is possible. All great artists need one, especially in this day and age where everyone's opinions are platformed and amplified. Do not quit.
I think it's lovely that people have sent support. But when I looked through that Instagram post, I would say that I didn't tabulate it, but I would say the majority of the comments were actually quite hateful and there was a lot of fat shaming.
Yes.
So someone said she's able to quit her whole career, but not KFC.
Mm-hmm.
And someone else said dragged. It's hard to drag someone like you. And these were the mild versions.
Yeah, but a big theme of it, Sarah, is, and really getting straight into it, is that there's this comment. It's like, if Lizzo doesn't want to get trolled, then maybe don't go out in public with half your arse out and claim to be all about body positivity. Mm. Your body positivity is literally killing millions of people.
I think what she's promoting is loving your body. If you happen to be in a bigger body, then love it. She's not saying, can you please go out and gain weight in order for you to love yourself? You know what I mean?
I do know what you mean. I think it's the flaunting, I think, that gets people. It's not like that, okay, we accept that you're big and you dress in a nice way, like covered up. That's what they want her to do, basically.
Mm.
You know, there was plenty of bigger women in the music industry that have gone before her. But they did the more power diva look, didn't they? Like wearing long dresses and shawls and what did you call it before? A muumuu, whatever it was called.
Yeah. Kaftan. I think it's more than that. It's almost like you're allowed to be big in public if you show enough deference or shame.
Exactly.
That you know you shouldn't be in that body. So you should be in a constant state of shame and apology for just existing in that body. And look, I'm in a bigger body. I've been in an even bigger body and I've been in a smaller body than I currently am. When I was in a really big body, bigger than now, even now sometimes, there is that feeling that you should be apologizing just for existing. Now, no one knows my medical history if they just meet me on the street. I might be actively trying to lose weight. I might dislike being in a body. I might be struggling with it. But that doesn't mean I should apologizing for existing. We're all constantly fluctuating. Are we only allowed to love ourselves when we're perfect? Because no one is perfect. What it really made me think of is like, oh, I would not want to be that famous. She's the one with her head above the parapet taking hits for everyone. Do you know what I mean? And, you know, this is separate to the, we don't know what happened with the sexual assault case. And if she is guilty of bullying and stuff, then, you know, she does need to be held accountable. I haven't done enough research on that and I don't know. But just for this one aspect of her getting a lot of stuff around weight, I just think as well, people go for the easiest low-hanging fruit. So if they want to insult someone, they're going to go for the easiest thing. Sometimes that's weight, sometimes it's race, sometimes it's something else. You know, it's like kids. They'll pick on whatever's the easiest to say, you know.
But we've also said this before, like when you are happy and like you said earlier, not showing shame and just getting on about your life and just really enjoying life, it's like it really does attract haters. They're like,
how can you be happy?
How can you be happy? How can you be talented? How can you be earning money when I'm over here, you know, and doing all this stuff and not getting half the success or, you know, attention?
Yeah. And not apologizing for being in a bigger body.
So this brings us on to Rebel Wilson, and she's had a lot of revelations come out this week, hasn't she?
Yeah, absolutely. Because she's released a memoir called Rebel Rising. I mean, interestingly, there's quite a few things. Like, for example, the one that seems to be at like every other story is around Sacha Baron Cohen. And, you know, she made a lot of claims about a variety of bad behaviour on the set of their 2016 movie, The Brothers Grimsby.
Mm-hmm.
He, however, in return, has called all of her claims demonstrably false. And he's even released some behind-the-scenes footage that seemed to suggest she was actually on board with the sex scene that she claimed she wasn't. But again, when you're only shown a clip, you don't know the context. It's complicated. And we're not really here to decide who's right or wrong in this, thank God. But interestingly, people have had a lot to say, haven't they?
They have. And I was looking at some of the comments and someone said, some of these comments are so nasty. She's funny, witty, and seems like a genuinely nice person. I can't imagine a man being attacked in such a way. And then this comment, take some accountability for accepting the script and the pay packet. She wasn't hired for any other type of roles. She was hired to play a joke role. And then this kind of theme kept coming up, which is, I want people to laugh at me being fat, but only in a way I approve of.
Yeah, it's interesting that. Yeah.
Yeah, because we talked about that in our original fat shaming episode, that we talked about this idea of she built her brand on being Fat Amy, right? And playing these kind of, oh, look at me, I'm the fat, funny friend.
Yeah. And it does make me think of, I remember seeing an article about Dawn French saying that she'd finally had enough of French and Saunders when she felt like she was the butt of the joke.
Yes.
And it is quite difficult, really, because I think a lot of people become the class clown or make jokes out of their own discomfort to control the narrative. You know, I've done it myself. I've made a lot of jokes like, you know, be careful of the elephant in the room. And I'm not just talking about me. You know, but on one thing, it's like, it is quite funny and it lightens the mood. And another, it's like, what am I saying about myself, or why am I getting that in? Because I'm thinking, you know, if I can make a joke about it first, then people are going to think I'm really cool and they're not going to make the mean direct jokes. You know, there's all these different things at play. It's so complicated, you know?
A lot of people on Reddit, when I looked at this topic, were sort of, you know, we want to validate her claims about Sacha Baron Cohen.
Mm.
We know he built his career on doing quite extreme content.
Yeah.
And almost like being like, I cannot believe that he would compromise her. And he's also taken such a strong stance in terms of managing her claims. And a lot of people were saying, look, she's out there trying to market her book with all these controversies. And there's this big idea that she's kind of really a bit like our last episode about My Emotional Truth and the idea of the celebrity memoir, is that she's really got to come out with these big revelations to have these talking points, but they're also almost like not landing quite right. And so there was this other quote that said, but in her slight defense, this is how most memoirs are marketed. It grabs attention and headlines. So I wanted to ask you, do you think this is like kind of an inevitable part of writing your memoir, is that you've got to come out with some really big accusations to get those viral moments?
I think you do today, because unless you're already really established. So, you know, like if Barbara Streisand brings out, has she already done one? I don't know. But like,
I think she did a mega memoir.
Yeah, but someone who's had a really big history, people are already, she has a big fan base. But there's so many out here that to grab attention, you do need like some kind of, you're spilling the tea on other celebrities. There's always that element, isn't there, where if someone's selling something or going to get money for something, and that's when they make the claim, it does hang this additional question mark, rightly or wrongly, over them as sort of like, well, you're going to gain from disclosing. So to what extent can we believe you, you know?
Mm. So there was a strange sort of thing that went viral, I think just in the last 24 hours, about people getting her and Adele mixed up. And she said in her book, some actresses would be offended if I call them plus size in this book, so I have to be careful with what I say. This is why I think Adele hates me. To be fair, I've never asked her. It's just this one excerpt in this book, but it's like really, like I said, getting a lot of attention. And then someone said in the comments, does Rebel think they're both larger women and that Adele owes her an interaction? That's even weirder. Like, Adele doesn't need to talk to Rebel Wilson. She's a minor character in a couple of movies. Why would Adele go out of her way to talk to her? It's so weird. But it's just this idea that she's sort of clutching at straws to create these sound bites, you know?
Yeah, and I don't know how much she is, or maybe she had a full conversation and randomly mentioned that, and then, say, the reporter goes, okay, this is going to make a good story. It's so hard to know how these things are done. But yeah, I think that's the whole industry of marketing, isn't it? And PR is like to make a mountain out of a molehill. And I feel sorry for the people drawn into it, you know?
Yeah, but when you think, when we picked who to talk about in our fat shaming episode, we did pick Rebel Wilson and Adele and Lizzo because they are the most prominent figures when it comes to, you know, conversations about bigger bodies, and because Rebel Wilson and Adele both lost weight at the same time.
Mm. And yet they were still criticised. That's what was so interesting, is they were sort of damned if they do, like them, or damned if they don't, like Lizzo. So it was like, you know, you can't win.
The thing is with Rebel Wilson, she's at, I think, quite a strange point in her career. You know, she lost a lot of weight. She's got healthy. She documented her year of health. She did that Netflix film, which I don't know how well it performed. But it's almost like she's maybe, is she in a bit of a loss period in her career? She's coming out with this memoir, which you said about Barbara Streisand, you think it's something you do a bit later on in your life.
Mm.
But now she's coming out now with claims that she actually used Ozempic when she lost weight, which I thought, okay, that's interesting. Because I felt a lot of the emphasis when she lost weight, you know, whereas Adele was a bit more mysterious and just said she exercised and she came out looking phenomenally thin. You know, with Rebel Wilson, you generally felt it was all through hiking and juicing and things like that.
Yeah, she'd really pushed the narrative that it was a natural thing, a lot of stuff to do with her trainer and stuff. And to be fair, she's admitted to using Ozempic, but only as a maintenance after she'd lost the weight.
Mm-hmm.
So who knows? But she had been hit by those kind of accusations the entire time. And it feels like whenever anyone loses weight now, everyone is just going, yeah, it has to be Ozempic.
Mm-hmm.
And someone commented and said, you know, her weight didn't drop off because she spoke to a therapist. It dropped off just as Ozempic became available. I wish some of these celebs would be honest. Didn't Oprah come out and also admit to using Ozempic later after she'd said she'd never do it?
Yes, she did. And she has famously been a Weight Watchers spokesperson for years and is actually on their board. So she parted ways with them last year, I think, which was quite a big thing, I think, because she came out with those Ozempic revelations.
Mm. It's just so interesting to see people deny things and then eventually come out with them. And look, no one owes the world their medical history. But I think it's very different saying, you know what, I'm not going to comment on this, to actively denying it and selling things, you know, selling that as part of your story and then it coming out. And a lot of people really struggle with that because then they feel that there is this false idea being sold to them, and that also the idea that celebrities have easy access to these things and regular people don't. I mean, I have no problem with Ozempic. I am on Ozempic. I think it's appropriate for some people and not everyone. Like, I don't understand people who are slightly curvy being put on it. It's an actual metabolic thing. It should only be, you know, I've got PCOS and, you know, and have had morbid obesity and other things. I'm not advocating it for everyone. I don't see any shame in it under the right circumstances, but I think there's something a little bit problematic when you're claiming you lost a whole lot of weight naturally and you didn't, you know?
Mm. Maybe she was saving it for her memoir.
yeah, exactly. We don't know how long this is being planned and a big reveal. It's like Vanessa Hudgens, who was shutting down all the pregnancy rumours so that she could turn up at the Oscars and shock everyone with her bump, because that is going to get a bigger PR thing. And they're in this industry where it's all about, can you get your name out there? And that directly affects whether you can do your job, which is a bit sad, really.
Yeah. So one of the things I wanted to just sort of reflect on is that with this body positivity movement, which I'm fully behind as a bigger woman, trying to get healthy, keep healthy. One of the things I found interesting is I was listening to a little podcast in the week about Anna Wintour and how she was so successful, and she's running Condé Nast now, and I think she's 74. But they said the only misstep she made really in her career, and all the things that you'd think she did, she revived the Met Gala, she launched the Hollywood kind of feeling of Vogue and kind of revitalized its sales. I mean, it's had this huge success, Vogue. But the one misstep they said she made was that she wasn't behind the body positivity movement. And that she was very slow to accept that in the magazine. some of the people on the podcast said that she was actually quite famous for being fat phobic, which we know a lot of fashion designers are also that way. And just because it's innately such a industry that worships thinness, it feels like as long as that is like the perfect aesthetic and ideal, and you've got gatekeepers like Anna Wintour, even at her age, you know, having her hold over the magazine and what gets seen or not, I don't know if we can ever really make that breakthrough to accepting different body sizes.
Yeah, and I think, you know, it almost brings us back to Lizzo. You almost have to see them enough that you just... And I think I saw her, she said something like, you know, she's not so much into body positivity now, Lizzo, but she said she's into body neutrality. And I think that that's really important is, you know, just accepting everyone's bodies. We don't have to promote one or denigrate another, but everyone has the right to be in their body for whatever reason they are in the body that they are. And we don't have to make such a big deal about it, you know?
As we've said, all the research shows shaming people does not help them lose weight. Just leave everyone alone, I guess, is what I want to say. But do we live in that world? No.
No, and that's what I found shocking in the comments. And, you know, I said every time we do an episode, I'm just like, I'm shocked at like how cruel people are and just the industrial scale of the hate. It's just, that's the part of doing straight to the comments that's difficult. It's like you try and pick out the comments that seem a little bit more thoughtful, but there is this kind of general trend of like, let's just go and pile on and hate on somebody.
Yeah.
But do we think Lizzo's really going to quit the music, or do you think she's going to come back?
I think she'll probably come back.
I think so. I hope so.
It's a bit like Cher. How many goodbye tours has she done now?
If I could turn back time.
God, I wish I could.
So we're going to round things off, as usual, on our minis with our crazy celeb predictions. So Lisa, what's yours?
So my crazy celebrity prediction is that Timothée Chalamet.
It's the L first.
Chalamet.
You want to say Chalamet every time. Chalamet,
ski slopes. He gets married to Kylie Jenner. They do a new spin-off show called Keeping Up with the Chalamets.
Oh.
Would you watch?
Well, I didn't watch the original, so probably wouldn't.
Probably not.
I'd probably just read the comments about it.
Yeah.
That, you know, part of the job.
Okay, what's yours?
So mine is that Janet Jackson creates a new dance move called the elbow, which goes viral, and so much so that she's invited to the White House by President Biden to teach him so that he can do it for YouTube, so he can seem younger for all his prospective voters.
The elbow, what does it involve?
I don't know. It came into my head. I went, oh, there's a dance move called the elbow. And then I was like, I don't need to work out
what
that is.
She's giving him the elbow.
She's giving him the elbow. Like, unless you're making your whole body look like an elbow. I don't know. We're going to have to wait for Janet Jackson to do this and then we can find out.
Okay, so this is like, I think that she's going to teach him TikTok. I'm not going to be surprised if either of them in the running to become president start using TikTok more and doing some viral dances. So yeah, I can see it happening.
Yeah.
So thank you for listening and joining us this week.
And remember, if you have any questions you want us to answer or topics to discuss in these minis, and they can even be personal questions, we may or may not answer them, please send them to Lisa over on Instagram.
Yeah, we're getting a lot of requests to do Puff Daddy, but I'm saying that we don't know if we feel ready for this one yet.
Not quite, yeah. Story still developing.
Next episode we've got, I think, is a really juicy one. We're doing dating as an older woman.
Yes, from the celebrity perspective, but also from our lives.
Oh, it's not a confessional. I thought it was a confessional episode.
No, it's not Sex in the City part de.
That night, I got to wondering, what is Sarah doing in Australia in the outback?
She's by herself talking to kangaroos and trying to hoover up cobwebs. Pretty much an exciting life. There's really no possibility of dating out in the middle of nowhere. So yeah.
There's literally no hot farmers around.
I would have to go and find them, and I don't think I can be bothered. Plus, they're probably all married or related.
Oh.
You know, okay. I went to kindergarten with them. So, you know, like, who knows? Anyway,
But yeah, tune in for that. And we'll see you next week.
See you.
Bye.
Thank you to our lovely producer, Emily. If you enjoyed today's episode, please don't forget to leave a review and subscribe. It really does help us in reaching more people. You can also follow us on Instagram. Our handle is @S2TCPodcast. You can find out more about the show, get behind the scenes, come and say hello. Until then, see you next time.
This podcast has been produced by Emily Crosby Media.